One that comes to mind is was a unique case about probably 2 years ago, which we call the fruit vendor case. And as you know, within anywhere you go in any place, that you'll see individuals selling produce, like, you know, either strawberries, mangoes.
On street corners.
On the corner. And so this was brought to our attention through the district captain at Ingleside Station. And he came into contact with an individual that was there. And he said, hey, he was starting to set up his little produce stand out in the corner. He says, hey, could you please move? And the guy basically gave the district captain some attitude, you know. And so it came to his attention. He says, okay, wait a minute. This is my district. This, you know, you're supposed to be packing up and going. And this guy didn't care. So goes back, tells his folks. We get a phone call, say, hey, I think there's something going on. We just don't know. Can you help us out with this problem? I said, sure. So now we're coming up with a game plan. You know, well, okay, let's see who these folks are, see if we can identify. But we never heard the word or saw anything that the light bulb came on and said, this is trafficking. And then all of a sudden, they come in contact with a juvenile.
And who's selling?
Who's selling fruit. And it was during a school day. And it's the questions of the officer. And the officer, I give credit to our members, and the officers did an outstanding job. Started asking questions beyond the get out, here's a ticket, or go. Why aren't you in school? Mm-hmm. I stand here and sell fruit. And then they started asking more questions, which revealed that this young boy wanted out from this organization, but he couldn't because he didn't have the means. So they brought him to the station. Then they said, well, who picks you up? Who does? And there was another individual that came and identified him, not as the parent or legal guardian, but someone that takes them from point A to point B, from a play from San Jose to San Francisco. And so we start interviewing him. We get called out. We talk to these things. And that's where we got people from Child Protective Services and foster parents and all these. And we get the story from this young boy. And he tells us, he goes, hey, so this is what I met these folks in my hometown in Mexico. And I wanted to make some money for my family. And we came up with this contract that you would bring me from my town into the United States, and I would sell produce. I'd have the weekends off, 9 to 5. And I would work for 30 days with to pay back the debt.
And this is just some guy who he met down there?
This is a guy that was known in his little town that he would recruit. And then, so he smuggled. He comes in. He's being chased by Border Patrol. Very dramatic. He says he's at one point.
How old is he?
He's about 15 years old.
Uh-huh.
And he's taken to a safe house in Arizona. And we've been told about these safe houses. Imagine a one-bedroom house, just wall-to-wall people. And the person that's running the home will charge $60 a head a day.
Charge the kid and all the other people?
Not just the kid, but whoever is the transporter of the children or the people would charge that person. So say you're running the organization. You would be charged $60 a day for each. So you had 10 people, 60. You can imagine this is a day.
Charged by the landlord.
Exactly. And one bathroom, you fend for yourself, no food, and this in Arizona. So you can imagine that these conditions weren't good.
And so they're going from there, from that safe house, to the Bay Area.
So now you can imagine these people are moving these folks very fast because they don't want to pay the overhead, shoving them in cars. And he describes this transportation coming over to San Jose. From San Jose, he's brought to a house where there's other individuals that are doing the same thing, selling fruit on the corner. probably about 12 people inside this house. Outside the house were several vans, white vans, and also like a tent. And this is how he describes it. They would get up in the early in the morning, go to, depending on the produce. So if wherever they were growing strawberries, they'd get up early, go there, bring them back to the house, do like a conveyor belt, split up all the boxes for each person that's going to sell, and then off they go. They would drive them to the different locations, either San Jose, San Francisco, or somewhere within the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
He was moved from here to Oregon, to Chicago. From Chicago, he was robbed. He was brought back over here. And finally, he told one of the controllers, said, I want out. I want to go. Well, you're on your own. You paid your debt, and he was getting a little bit of money back. He says, but it doesn't matter. You're on your own. You want to go back? You find your way back. And again, this is part of the process of controlling somebody, is they know your needs. They already understand what it is that you're here. And you can see, imagine that you're a 15-year-old kid that was smuggled within the United States, and no matter what we say, that we are a sanctuary city, people still have that fear. That fear sets in and says, hey, you know what? Something's bad's going to happen to me. The cops are corrupt. If you say anything, they're just going to throw you in jail and you're never going to see anybody again. And you know what they do to you at jail. So, and you can imagine if you're watching a TV show or whatever, fiction, you know, something like that, you're really not going to get the sense of what the United States is about.
Well, so how do you convey to people who are in situations like this? Because obviously it's fairly widespread. And in fact, San Francisco is known as one of the top cities for labor trafficking going on, as I understand. So how do you convey to people who are in such a situation that, yes, this is a sanctuary city and you have different rights, that, you know, you can find safety by coming forward and talking about your situation?
Well, it's people like you. It's people like... having that outlet to say, hey, these are your rights. This is what you should know. This is when you're here, you come with the United States. There are certain things that you can do and you cannot do. You're not supposed to fear law enforcement, but we're supposed to be able to help you. And that's the last thing. So I think with that, and that message was conveyed to the boy, is that we're here to help you. And immediately, as soon as I sat down with the young boy, I'm putting them at ease. You're not in trouble. You did nothing wrong. And I think once they know that, and that fear is taken away and that trust is built, because you know and I know that once that trust is built, if there's another individual in the same circumstances, they're going to talk and they're going to say, hey, you know what? No, it's nothing like that. This guy over here, or these officers, or this agency came together. They helped me. They helped me to get back home. And that was his goal. His goal was to contact his mom. So with that, we were able, that's the first part of this investigation. So now we know, and it was funny because we were able to locate the location. He didn't even know the phone number.
In San Jose.
In San Jose. And when you Google Earth the place, exactly what he described.
All these vans.
Is what you saw. Mm-hmm. Is what you saw. And the funny part was he had a cell phone. He had his own cell phone. And he would take pictures. He took all these pictures of the people that were bringing them back and forth, selling fruit on the corner. He took pictures in Oregon. He took pictures being in front of a squad car in San Jose. I mean, he took pictures of all through his camera phone. You could see what he was going through. You could see. And he was happy. I mean, he was sad or beaten a bit. But he was, again, he was afraid. But he knew that, okay, I'm going to try to make the best of this for right now. So now that we know about what happened to the boy, we had a debrief with the officers of that station, and we're talking, and I can say within a month, we get a call from another officer and says, hey, we just stopped a van that has a bunch of fruit in it, but one of the folks there wants to talk to you. And I said, okay, all right. So they brought him back to the station. And it was a husband and wife that were initially involved with this group that the boy had told us. And actually, the husband was the main suspect's cousin. And what he had asked his cousin was, he says, hey, could you do me a favor? I'll pay you extra. Could you bring my wife over? And, you know, we're cousins, and you know, I'll work extra. And he'd already worked off his debt, and he'd been working for him for a while, and everything was fine. So, yeah, sure, cousin. I'll do that for you. As she tells me the story, and they come across the desert, he pulls her away from the crowd, and he sexually assaults her in the desert. Not once, but several times. The time that she got to San Jose, she had been beaten down, constantly told, if you say anything, you know, the glare. And the husband knew something was up, and still, maybe even to this date, he still doesn't know, because she felt it was her fault. And again, that's part of that power and control, is the blame that I brought this on. I should have known better. So she tells her husband, I really don't like him. I want to. And they got in an argument. They splintered off. So she tells us this story, and it has the same flavor, the same. And she draws us a map of the house, and it's the exact same house. And we knew right then and there it was the same group. So now we have this kid, and they remember the kid. And the kid actually remembered her, because she was the cook inside the house. We got our federal agencies, the FBI, involved. And we said, hey, this is what we have. Because we were all looking for this one particular case. Say, hey, this is a little bigger than what it is. It's not only San Francisco, San Jose. You have Oregon, Chicago. You have going across the border.
Arizona.
You have sexual assault. You have moving of folks, you know. So we we got involved. It was an excellent operation. We're all four brothers happened to be in town, and they would rotate. So there were four brothers, and one would be in Mexico, one would be the transporter, one would stay in San Jose, and one would go to Oregon. And they would have this way about moving around. So they were all found. They were caught. They were all found. They pled guilty to smuggling charges on that case. And so it was a good case.
Now, where's that boy now?
He is back home, happy, very happy. He wanted his Xbox back. We were able to get him that.